Brett Hayes is Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, holds a PhD in Government and Politics from the University of Maryland. His areas of expertise include American political development, constitutional politics, and American institutions. Let's start with constitutional politics. The Democrats had a candidate that they wanted to put on the court. The poor guy didn't even get a hearing, Merrick Garland. And so now the Democrats are confronted with whether or not they want to punish the Republicans by giving the Trump appointee Neil Gorsuch similar treatment and whether there should be a filibuster. And it looks as we speak as if he's going to get a filibuster. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, so things are a mess. We've been headed down this path for quite some time where the judicial confirmation process has been increasingly politicized. And there are some important road marks along the way. For example, in 2013, the rules of the filibuster were changed so as the filibuster doesn't apply to lower court nominees. And there was even some debate at the time about whether, in fact, they should remove it for Supreme Court nominees, but they chose to keep it in place. But we've gotten to this point now where there seems to be no consensus on voting on individuals, even if, in fact, they appear to have, the qualifications of being fluent in constitutional argumentation, being proficient on the canon of constitutional cases. And it's become largely about kind of scoring points with particular constituents. And when you get to that point, it means that it's very difficult to get consensus towards voting up or down. And so Democrats are, I think, find themselves very much in this position. And make no mistake, this is very much in response to the result, to the Merrick Garland result, where they wouldn't even schedule a hearing, which was unjustifiable. But it's put the Democrats in a rough place. I mean, Judge Gorsuch appears to be qualified. He also appears to be deeply conservative. But in the confirmation hearings, he didn't have any big slip-ups. He simply kind of played the game as nominees play these days, which is to not really say much of anything. But based on his record, he appears to be qualified in that non-political way. But so most of the opposition then is just about ideology, and that makes for a much more difficult case for the Democrats to make about why they are choosing to filibuster and to oppose his confirmation.
I have heard Republicans, I must say, infuriatingly so, say up or down, just give him an up or down vote. Wait a minute. They didn't give an up or down vote to Merrick Garland.
They didn't. And obviously, that's what the Democrats are coming back on. But it's challenging in the sense that we're now to the point where, a vote is the obvious next step. And they're trying to stop that, knowing that they're going to force the hands of Republicans to change Rule 22, the Clutcher vote.
Otherwise known as the nuclear option.
The nuclear option, so that it'll simply be a majority vote to confirm a Supreme Court justices moving forward.
But they remember what goes up goes down.
They do, but I don't think that's going to change things. I mean, I think Gorsuch, it will be confirmed. I'd be very surprised if that doesn't happen and if the Republicans do not change the filibuster rule. And that has, I think, problematic long-term consequences for the court. One of the interesting things about the court, if you think about it over its history, is that the court has been a fairly moderate institution, which isn't to say that it never hands down decisions that are to the left or to the right of conventional politics. But for the most part, it's in the mainstream, and most of its history has been in the mainstream of American politics. One of the reasons for that is kind of institutional. In other words, that requirement to get to 60 votes in the Senate kind of tempered ideological efforts by presidents, to put on justices that would carry out their decisions. It was, in other words, you had to get to that point where you could get to 60 votes, which usually meant reaching to some extent across the aisle. So you tended to get justices that, were to the left or to the right, but they were not ideologically extreme. This, though, suggests that perhaps we're going to have a change where if you can simply just get to 51 votes, Democrats are likely to appoint people that are that much more liberal if they have the majority, and Republicans are likely to appoint justices that are that much more conservative if they have the majority. So I think that this could be a real turning point for the court where you're going to see greater extremism in that particular institution.
Tell me about this. What do we expect Gorsuch to do? He sort of led on that he was going to be, you know, every man's judge and look at each case. But the way that you scholars look at these things is you look at the record, right? And then you can pretty well predict, based on record, what somebody's going to do.
Yeah. No, there is kind of like an ideological scoring system that scholars have developed. In fact, it's known as the Martin Quinn scoring system, which enables political scientists and others to put judges in kind of ideological space based on their past voting patterns. And if you look at that, Gorsuch is very conservative. In fact, according to that particular scoring system, he's to the right of Justice Scalia, the justice that he is replacing, and would be the second most conservative justice on the court. He is to the left of Justice Thomas. But nevertheless, that he's likely to be quite conservative. And that is one thing that that did come out to a certain extent in the confirmation hearings. The confirmation hearings do not give you much, but he did not run from the originalist label. In other words, he basically said that he believes that the Constitution should be interpreted according to its original public understanding. In other words, he's trying to anchor constitutional meaning at the point of its ratification and the way that it was publicly understood at the time.
So black people would not be counted as a full person?
No, they would be because of the Amendment 13th process. Amendment, sure. The 14th Amendment. But if you think about the 14th Amendment, it contains the Equal Protection Clause. And that was passed in the wake of the Civil War as part of kind of the Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. And the framers at the time were focused on newly freed slaves. In other words, they wanted to protect newly freed persons of color, particularly in the American South, and perhaps extend a little bit of protection to white unionists in the American South. Well, who does that leave out? Well, it leaves out lots of other groups that have enjoyed protection under the Equal Protection Clause subsequent to that. So you can think about the rights of women. You could think of rights of the LGBTQ community, et cetera, that clearly that is not in the scope of originalism because the framers of the 14th mm-hmm. Amendment were not contemplating gender. They were not thinking about sexual identity. And so that's out. It doesn't mean that you can't gain protection statutorily, but that's a very different kind of protection than a constitutional guarantee. And so in that sense, Gorsuch was sending fairly strong signals about his conservatism.
And very quickly then, the court itself is going to have an impact. This is a very young man for a long time, right?
That's absolutely true. You know, he's likely to be on the court for, you know, 2.5-3 decades.
Amazing. Well, we had fun with our very good friend, Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College. And we like to call him our scholar in residence because he brings so much to the table. Thank you, Brad.
Always great to be on with you, Alan.